I'd like to remind you that for more Microsoft webcasts, you can go to microsoft.com/webcasts. Thanks again for joining us for today's presentation, Taking Scientific Computing Mainstream with Windows Client and Windows HPC Server 2008. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce today's presenter, Wenming Yi. Mr. Yi, you now have the floor.
Thank you, Christian. My name is Wenming Yi. I am a technical evangelist at Microsoft, and my specific area of interest is high-performance computing. So let's get started for today's session. Here are the session objectives and takeaways. First of all, I will introduce you to the world of HPC, the industry, and the applications behind it. And then we will look at the HPC programming model in the scientific sense, and also the visualization tools in action. We'll have 3 to 4 exciting demos today that you will be seeing at the later part of this presentation. So we have 2 key takeaways today. The first one is that Windows bring improved productivities and usabilities to your IT pro staff, your developers, and also end users, especially for scientists and developers who want to go into scientific computing, without having to hassle with difficult to use software. And the second key takeaway is that as the hardware improves and the software improves in general, high performance computing is really coming a lot closer to the average person than most of us think. Many people have told me that one of the biggest beneficiaries of hardware advance in the last 20 to 30 years has really been scientific research. And the amount of simulations that you can do with the current hardware is just astounding. And in the later part of this presentation, I'll show you how a small desktop now can simulate very much the same amount of computation as a traditional high-performance computer that costs millions of dollars. So here is an example of scientific computing at work. This is one of the largest national computing centers in the world called NERSC. If you look at the list of computing that are currently happening, there are hundreds and thousands of hours being spent on various projects. But at the same time, as a user or a developer is writing their software, each hour that they spend building the software or the code to optimize it for a new supercomputer, it could be hundreds or maybe thousands of idle CPU core time wasted. But that brings us to today's focus, which is on hardware that is compact enough, but yet still has the power of yesterday's supercomputer. In order for me to give you a better understanding of HPC, let's look at the software behind the world of a high-performance computer computing. First of all, most of these codes are open source or free, and most of them are Unix applications. It's not because that there are no people don't want to develop on Windows platform. It's rather that 30 years ago, the Windows platform didn't quite exist. And the second trait of these HPC codes is that they usually use this library called Message Passing Interface. And that is an industry standard, has been around for a long time. The character of this particular library is that you have extremely low latency and high bandwidth if you use the software stack. And we have done survey, and it shows majority of folks use the GNU toolchain for building their software, and almost all of the traditional HPC applications are written using C, C++, and Fortran, latest being C++, and the much more legacy ones being Fortran. And most of these projects actually have very limited resources and very complex ownership. For example, I have worked with teams that worked on an I/O library, which does input and output for large data sets. There's only two developers on that team. They're responsible for support. They're responsible for helping scientists creating their code. They're also responsible for releasing, deploy, and write up new features. And some of these codes have extremely complex ownership. For example, the weather research and forecast code that is currently running at NCAR is actually not owned just by one institution. It's owned by NOAA, University of Oklahoma, and NCAR themselves. There's also probably another three institutions that I haven't mentioned. So these codes are large, and also the developers are usually have limited resources to develop them. And also software is traditionally not a an area people focus when they have a budget to purchase HPC solutions. Most of the money is spent on hardware. As you can see, it's a kind of a very constrained environment for developing software for HPC. And in the past, there has been very few ports available for the Windows platform, but the number has been growing as we work with the communities to make them more available. And since a lot of these codes are traditionally developed on Unix platform, a lot of them have very good text user interface, and there's logs that you can look at, and there's error messages and standard in the traditional standard in and out and log files. But a lot of them would like to have a better graphical user interface front end to run the software. In a commercial world of HPC software, you would also see the same DNA of these codes, but usually you would have or find a Windows port just because customers demand that. So some of you might still be thinking, what exactly is HPC? And really, it's very simple, and all you have to remember is that underneath of all of this, it's just a very large matrix. And that matrix represents a physical problem that you're solving. So there are linear solvers, nonlinear solvers, and PDE solvers, that they all operate on the basis of matrices. And since a lot of these problems that people solve are very large, for example, nuclear explosion simulation and car crashes to simulate an actual physical model of an accelerator. So all of these problems are essentially distributed onto a grid. When you have to deal with a million by a million matrix, there is no way you can fit it on a single computer. So you have to distribute it onto a cluster of nodes. And these codes usually use a library called the message passing library, which is developed by Argonne National Lab many years ago. And the trade of this is that you will have low latency and high bandwidth, because for you to do these computations, the matrix needs to be floating around the cluster in a very efficient and fast way. And most of these jobs that you submit are pretty much batch and non-interactive. And they could take months and years to run for really large simulations. As you saw in the previous slide, the NERSC Computing Center has 30 millions of hours of core CPU time for these type of simulations. When you distribute them, it'll take a bit less time. So in order to support this type of software interface, you really need the hardware underneath. So that brings us to something called hardware called InfiniBand, which is capable of delivering bandwidth that is 40 times of the Ethernet, as well as the latency of a few microseconds rather than 40 times longer for regular Ethernet. And here are some of the people that work on HPC software, and we want to kind of highlight some of the problems they're having. Since I used to work in the scientific community developing scientific software, and I totally understand the implications and issues they have, and we also want to discuss some of the solutions and how Microsoft Windows platform could help them to ease some of that pain. So first of all, let's look at the developers that are developing these HPC software. Most of them are scientists or domain experts that ended up having to write software. And the daily scientific work is busy enough. Now, on top of that, they would have to write software in a very complex manner. And there are very few professional developers. Not that people don't want to do that. It's usually the case that if you're not a domain expert, it's very difficult for you to actually write the software yourself. And also, since a lot of these developers are in R&D organizations and academic, they have limited access to commercial operating systems, compilers, and tools. And science is often their primary job, and this is their job is not to write the code. Their job is to publish papers and do scientific research. And here are some of the users that are in the organization. A lot of them are students or people that are starting to get into scientific computation. And some of them actually have real work, such as publishing paper and visualizing software. Visualizing the data sets they have. But unfortunately, in order for them to do their work, they will first have to compile and build their software, and usually there isn't any support on it. And they are tied to their workstation. So the most powerful resource they have is really their workstation, and then somewhere far, far away there is a centralized computing resource that they will have to remote terminal log in. So here are some of the benefits of HPC that could help to ease some of the pain that developers are having in a traditional sense. So for Windows, one thing that is really saves you a lot of time is that the binary is pretty much compile once and run anywhere. So as you go into, in a traditional way, you have to pretty much build your software on each new supercomputer that comes online. So every 2 to 3 years, a national lab would have a new computer come online, and you would have to essentially look at new compilers, look at new software build environment, and adapt to that environment. So by the time you have done all that, it's half a year into the life of that supercomputer. So on Windows, you would not have to do that. The same binary you compiled on your desktop machine will run from laptop to desktop and the Windows HPC cluster. So it really scales well. And better tools. Visual Studio and other tools on Windows platform really make developers' job a heck of a lot easier. By pressing F5, you can go into debugging and you will have the benefit of a integrated user development environment. And also it gives you a more potential of new users and developers. So there's the binaries that you distribute could be easily accessible for students. They wouldn't have to build it themselves, and science enthusiasts, and inspires the next generation of scientists. Just like the space program. The space program has inspired a generation of scientists, and I certainly hope that by moving a lot of these science codes onto the Windows platform, we can inspire the next generation of computational scientists to do new discoveries. So this is a workflow chart that I want to emphasize here. So in order for folks to move onto the Windows platform using their software, first of all, their resources are already limited. And then they don't necessarily have the time to do it. So we have been building an ecosystem or that targets the workflow of the ACE particular, of the scientist developer community, so that they can go from building the software, having the libraries that they need to build their HPC applications, to also the post-processing, which is the analysis tools, especially in the areas of parallel visualization and also interactive computing. One of the things that comes free with Windows NTI stack is the Network Direct. So by bypassing the kernel, if you look on the right-hand side, it really makes the latency extremely fast. So the message that's being passed from the network device, hardware device that supports these very high bandwidth and low latency properties can go be taken advantage of directly. And if you don't have that hardware, the Microsoft MPI stack would also know that. So this is completely transparent to the developer. You wouldn't have to compile it with a special compiler to link with a special library as you normally have to do on a traditional supercomputer. So here are some of the tools that are available currently on our platform. So the first thing people use, as on in the previous slide, is that you need tools. You need tools to build your software. A lot of these tools are traditionally made by Unix-based tools, and also they're using Fortran. So Microsoft Visual Studio, Intel C, and Fortran compiler can really help you in that traditional sense. And there are also new languages that you can use to do more rapid prototyping. We also have debuggers, which is a strength on a commercial platform. We have the Microsoft Visual Studio 2010 has a very nice MPI debugger built in. And Alinea also has their DDT Lite ported, and it plugs directly into the Visual Studio. And also you can use something called the ETW, or Event Tracing for Windows. It's essentially a profiler and a debugger for your HPC application, so that performance, you can look at the performance and improve the performance in a much easier way. The runtime, we have obviously Microsoft MPI stack, but we also have a new computational scenario called the SOA model, which I won't cover today, but essentially it is a web service on a cluster. And we also have support for GPU computing, which is getting ever more popular. You can't really talk about HPC without talking about the math libraries. The Intel math library, the AMD math library, and also one of our partner, Visual Numerics, has their math library ported to the .NET language. And there are interactive computings that people can analyze that their data. We have MATLAB, commercial software, and ProView, open source, and SharePoint to support a workflow of a scientific computational process. Here's a look at a tracing of a HPC application, the messages that are being passed through an analyzer. Essentially, what you're looking at is on the vertical axis, you're looking at 16 different nodes, and you can see the white arrows are essentially passing the messages that are traveling through. So this particular screenshot was taken from a trace that I did with the PETI numerical library, and it's essentially doing a matrix solve operation. So here's our first demo, and one of the pain points of developing software on the traditional HPC platform, such as Linux or Unix, has been the build system. I used to do this for my previous job, and it'll take you hours or maybe days to build your software. And let's look at the command here. Most of you, I hope, that wouldn't have to do this for a living. So you're essentially, for the first 7 or 8 lines, essentially saying, okay, build this piece of software with the dependency libraries. And the dependency libraries also have to be built properly with the right compilers. So this particular instance, it is on the AIX 5.3 platform using a compiler that supports parallel. And the second config line you're looking at that uses, uses PathCP. What that means is it's a compiler that supports your supports InfiniBand and the drivers. So in order to take advantage of that, you have to rebuild your entire software stack using the PathScale compiler. So this is the kind of complexity that we want to reduce onto the Windows platform. So this demo shows you how you can take these make files and simply by pressing a couple of buttons and turn it into a Visual Studio environment. And then by just pressing build, you would get your software done on the Windows platform. So let's look at a demo here. So first of all, the tool is called CMake. It's written by a company called Kitware, and they are strive to make HPC a lot easier for developers as well as users on a cross-platform environment. So what you look at here is a GUI that they have. So what I want to do is to generate a Visual Studio from their build project. So first of all, I'm going to build a browse to the source of this, where the source of the project resides, or where the CMake file is. And I want to make sure that that is the same for the second one. So the next thing I want to do is to click on configure. So now you can select a target platform. So in this case, we're just going to select Visual Studio. And we're going to use the native default native compiler, which is Microsoft Visual C++. So by hitting finish and generate, you'll see that if we go into that directory, you'll see that the Visual Studio solution file has been generated. So if I double click on that and go into the source files, you can just use it like a regular project without having to actually build the project yourself. But at the same time, that CMake project can generate make files on other platforms as well, so making it a truly cross-platform project. So if I now hit build solution, it will say build started and it succeeded. And all the codes are going to reside in release. Actually, a debug directory. There you go. So the library has been created for you. So as you can see, the Visual Studio really takes this to a much simpler level rather than having to do all your configure lines yourself. And if you want to build a release target, you simply select release and build. And now we have a release project. So it's as easy as that. So that was our first demo. So now let's look at the second demo. Second demo essentially shows you the binary compatibility of the Windows platform. So by building a binary for your HPC application, you can take the same binary and put it on a cluster and it will simply run. You wouldn't have to reconfigure for any new platforms. The MPI stack will take care of the underlying hardware and take advantage of it automatically. So let's go into the second demo. The second demo, we're going to run a piece of code called the WARF, or weather simulation code. So the first thing I'm going to do is go into the WARF directory and run it just on the command line. So this is, you know, your workstation, and you wouldn't have to, you don't need a HPC cluster to be able to run this. A lot of people already have a multi-core machine, so that is essentially a supercomputer by itself in the parallel sense. So in order to run this, it's very simple. You just type mpi exec and warf.exe in that the same directory, and as you can see, it takes advantage of all the cores that I got. I got about 8 cores here, and this particular application scales relatively well. You'll see that it drops down to about 58% utilization when it's doing its I/O. So now it drops about 40%. So it's doing input and output. But otherwise, it's very much scales well on your system. So for people who don't necessarily have access to a supercomputer, this is actually just great for even workstation computation. So the same binary, we now are going to put it on a cluster. So let me introduce you to the Windows HPC cluster management tool. So when you install the HPC cluster, you'll use the HPC cluster manager. It will be installed on your menu here. It has it uses the very familiar WonderBar configuration as configuration, node management. You know, in this case, I have my QuakeBox has 7 blades, and each of them has 8 cores. And I also have a job management tool so that I can submit a job. And there's diagnostics in case anything goes wrong. All of these diagnostics would have to be normally written in a shell script or a custom way. This is all built in with the software. Essentially, you with this one application, you can manage an entire cluster from one node to up to 256. We have even in some instances up to thousands of nodes. So here I am going to simply submit a new job by doing a single task job. It's very simple. I'm going to run the same simulation essentially. So the same command, mpi exec warf.exe. And I want to make sure that the working directory is c colon warf. And here I have 7 blades. So 7 times 8 is 56. So we're going to use 56 cores, and as a minimum and as a maximum. And that's really all you have to do to submit it to the supercomputer. So the way you can tell it is working is that the node management has all the nodes light up, and we're all using 96% CPU time, which means it is extremely scalable for this particular piece of software. And the submission process is very simple. And if you want to take a look at the details of what happens, you simply go back to the job management tool and select my task and go to activity log. So it says the computation started with 8 cores on all of these machines. So you have, I'm using 56 cores, and the job detail and when it was submitted, the job ID, and you can certainly look at the task ID itself, and it's right now it is running. So certainly we don't have the time to wait around for this simulation to finish. We can simply just cancel the job. As you can see, this is a very nice interface. It brings a lot of value to people who want to do scientific computation. And most importantly, the binary is compatible. You can take it from your laptop to your workstation and to your supercomputer without having to build the software, which is a major pain for a lot of developers and also a productivity drain. So our next demo here is Python and IPython. Python has been one of the most popular, or I wouldn't say most popular, increasingly more popular programming language for interactive computing. It hides the high-level interface for scientists. So it really is something that people are moving towards. So IPython is a GRID engine that uses the Python programming language. So you can take the same Python code and parallelize it at a higher level so that scientists could just simply use that. And we are very, very excited about the fact that this GRID engine has been ported over to the Windows platform. If you go to ipython.org, you will see the announcement that has been ported over to Windows 2008. And there are many applications you can use through this interactive interface for doing scaling out your computation by distributing your memory across the compute engines or the cluster, by connecting and disconnecting to the engine and see what's happening in real time of the computation. And also, the same code can be scaled out from multi-core to the cluster to the supercomputer and even the cloud. So we're going to do a really simple demo here to show you how easy it is to have that scientist-focused scientific software running on our HPC platform. So here's actually a diagram of how it works. So first of all, you have an interactive shell, and you talk to the IPython controller, and the IPython engines get submitted to the HPC cluster, and you can interact with that in an interactive shell. So let's go back to our demos here. So here I have a folder which is in multi-column simulation. So the first thing I will do is to go on the cluster and say if there is any jobs running. So it looks like all the jobs are gone. That wharf was canceled. So let's click on run, and that starts up the IPython engine. So let's go back to the cluster and see now that has started. And if you look at the detailed logs, it started 56 instances of the IP cluster engine or the IPython GRID engine. So the next thing we want to do is to start the interactive shell. And here it's really easy. You just simply click on PyLab. And so our demo is actually targeted towards the computational finance folks. So if I go to c:/ipython demo and MC, as you can see, there's several Python files here. And all I have to do is to just run MC driver Python. So this particular demo is a Monte Carlo simulation that computes Asian and European options. So in a computational finance, people look at options and to see whether they're a good deal or not, depending on the volatility that they anticipate for a particular security. So the first thing it will ask me, the driver software, it will ask me, hey, where is your cluster? So I already have a profile stored here. It's called My Cluster. So I'm just going to press Enter. And the initial price of your security is $100. And the interest rate of the current interest rate, which is 5%. And day to expire, these are just parameters that you're going to need. And we're going to simulate 200,000 Monte Carlo paths to determine the best prices for these options. So the strike value and a number of strike values essentially saying the option at certain prices. Here I'm just randomly putting in 90 to 100. And normally I think it would be increments of more even numbers. And the volatility is 10. And we're going to add all of that as well. So there is a band of volatility that you're anticipating. So it looks like that didn't quite run. So we're going to run the same program again. So now it got started. So if I go back to the cluster, and go to the node management, you'll see that the engine started right away. And they're all using 100% CPU. Since this is a Monte Carlo simulation, it's more or less an embarrassingly parallel problem. And once we're done here, all we have to do is just type in plot all to show the actual contour plot of the best options prices you can use depending on the strike price and also the volatility of your pricing. So as you can see, this is very simple to write. And let's look at the actual code very quickly. By the way, this is one of my favorite editor, Notepad++, which is also open source on the Windows platform. You're simply distributing the computation onto the cluster over here, you know, for each strike in the strike value and for each sigma of the task. And then you just essentially send in the map, the task, to each of the client. And at the end, you simply do a contour plot by passing in the matrices. So it's a very easy to use piece of software, and it is available on our platform. So that is the IPython demo, and let's go back to the slides. So the final process in a scientific computation or the workflow is the visualization part of it. And that's probably one of the most exciting part for most people, but very tedious and difficult for scientists actually to do. They usually run out of time by the time they can generate cool plots for the general public for consumption. UI or user interfaces generally and visualization has generally been a very well-known strength of the Windows platform. So we have several applications we want to show you here that really simplifies the process of visualization. And you wouldn't have to build these offers that would take you days to do. For example, here, Visit has a, I think it's 14-page build instructions. And by the time I got it built last time, it took about 2 weeks. Here we have pre-built binaries that people can use and look at. I have a fairly simple demo here, and to visualize a scientific data set through a program called Purview, which is similar to the other piece of software called Visit, but in a much more user-friendly way. So let me go into the cluster one more time. So first of all, let me kill the previous job. And in order to kill the previous job, it's really quite simple. You just hit Control C on that. And if it doesn't die, you can always go into the cluster management tool or job management tool to kill it. So this management console really gives you a very flexible and easy way of dealing with the cluster as a user. So first of all, this piece of software is called Purview, and it will work standalone. But here, in this case, we want to demonstrate that it works well on a cluster. So by going to File and hit Connect, we can look click on the Cray 01 and look at what actually happens at the software. So the first thing you do is to run the job submit command. So you want the parallel reader to run on a cluster, and the client connects to it to get the data out. So in this case, I already have that typed in, so I want to use all 7 nodes that I got here. So the next thing I do is simply click on connect. And so now we're connected to the cluster. So once again, it's very easy to figure out whether this thing worked or not by simply going to the cluster management tool. If you look at the activity log, voila, it just works as expected. It just works. The connected to the cluster. So the next thing we want to do is to open up a data set by clicking on the actual node that you're connected to and browse to the data directory. So in this case, we want to look at a frog skeleton model, which by itself is actually a very large data set. So we're going to open that up and hit apply. So you can see the frog model relatively well here. We're going to use a wireframe, and we can zoom in to see the level of details that we're actually concerned about. It's quite a lot of data, that, as you can see. So one may ask, how exactly does it work on a cluster? So let's add some visualization to that. So what I'm going to do is to tell this machine and show you how to distribute the data, how the data is distributed across the different nodes by showing you the different shades of color. So this frog now is shown in five to six different shades. So that means for each processor, it's taking part of the data set and rendering it or reading it in. So this is the power of parallel visualization. When you don't have enough data set, when you don't have enough computation on a workstation, you can take the data set and distribute it across the cluster. And at the same time, you can take advantage of GPUs on each of these machines to do a rendering of the software for you at the same time. So better yet, we can save this. Export this into a ray tracing format and save it. So most of you may have seen the movie Avatar. So the movie is by itself rendered on a cluster farm. I don't have the movie grade rendering farm, but here I have a ray tracing software called Pavre. So the frog that we just saved, and we can simply take that exported Pavre file and render a really nice image of a anti-aliased image of the frog with the internal organs using the ray tracing software. As you can see, the software, the file is almost 100 megabytes. And so by using Pavre to trace this, you can really get a very good look at the final product, a final image, and it's higher resolution for what you can do interactively. So that is our final demo, and let's go back to the slide. On the 16th, we'll go into more details of how you actually migrate an application from the Windows platform, a Unix, traditional Unix platform to the Windows platform, and actually even vice versa, to create a cross-platform build system so that your software will run well on each of the platforms. So in this case, I have some examples for the February 16th a webcast. One of them is Techion, and we're going to look at a parallel high-resolution ray tracing software and how that works across platform, and how the software is coded in terms of multi-threading and MPI, and also not sacrificing cross-platform at the same time, but you know, you use the platform-specific features as well. So these are the agendas and topics for the next webcast and how to build. Well, the first thing you usually do is to know how to build your application on the Unix platform and how to choose a compiler, a build system, and how to fix cross-platform issues using ifdef in the traditional sense, and also how to pick your best visualization or GUI systems that is cross-platform. So that brings us back to the conclusion. I will be making announcements of these software as they become available on the Windows platform, and we'll be distributing binaries of these software. And please look at my blog announcements, and we are strive to complete the Eagle, the open source application ecosystem with also the commercial software, so that developers and users can be much more productive and on the platform, also making their software more usable. And the future work includes enhancements and completing the HPC ecosystem in the sense of both commercial software and open source software on our platform. And we'll be, once again, I will be making these announcements in my blog and also the Channel 9 videos of how to use these software. And finally, I want to just mention that the February 16th again, and we will be doing a webcast on application migration, and it's not only targeted towards traditional HPC software, but also the Unix applications in general. We have some really cool tools to make your job easier. And resources. So my blog is at blogs.msdn.com, HPC Tracker, and my job and vision is to help make a scientist's job easier, and so that they can focus on their science rather than the complexities of computation. We also want to mention a tool called the dictionary tool, which we will go into details in the next webcast, which has essentially a cheat sheet of all the codes you would have to do that are Windows specific for Unix APIs. And I've been publishing some of the software, how to use them and how to run them through the HPC show. So that is some, along with my blog, I will be publishing things there that will be useful for folks that are trying to get into the HPC HPC on the Windows platform. So today's demonstration showed IPython. IPython is available through ipython.org, and also CMake and ParaView are both available through kitware.com. Kitware is a company that produces CMake and also ParaView. We also have a tremendous amount of resources on the Microsoft TechNet. This is the link that you're going to need for API references, for how to use the scheduler, and also in terms of large-scale deployment. And finally, I'd like to hand this webcast back to Christian. Christian?
Thank you very much. I'd like to remind everyone that you may print a PDF of the slides by clicking Control-P. You can either print or save the slides locally for your convenience. You should now be seeing a survey in your slide area. If you could take a moment to fill it out before you log off, we do appreciate any feedback you leave for us. All you need to do is follow the links provided to complete the evaluation. And with that, I'm going to hand the floor back over to Wei Ming to wrap up any questions that we have.
I'm ready to answer any questions you may have. In the question and answer tab, you can ask any questions you like. We have about 7 minutes to the top of the hour. So I see there is already a question there. And the question is, does the HPC server work on NVIDIA Tesla server cluster? And since the number of cores present on such platform is significantly more, of the order of thousands of cores, does the HPC server scale appropriately? And that is a really good question. So first of all, you can, and we have, you can use the Tesla cluster on the Windows HPC cluster. Essentially, what you have to do is to set the graphic context. There's an environment variable you can set, so you can take advantage of the numerical computation in terms of CUDA, using CUDA, or you can also take advantage of the OpenGL rendering. So for example, ParaView would be able to take advantage of the GPU that's available on your cluster on each of the nodes. The scaling question, since the question is that since the number of cores present on such platform is thousands of cores on these GPUs, the answer is it really depends on your application. If your application is embarrassingly parallel or can take advantage or can fit in a small memory print, and it doesn't require to be go in and out of your GPU very often, yes, that will scale, definitely. The HPC server can utilize GPUs on the cluster as well. So you can have a cluster of a mini cluster. So you can have hundreds of thousands of cores working simultaneously if you have the right application, that is. So I have a second question from Alice. Can I prioritize tasks? Absolutely, you can prioritize tasks. Our job scheduler is fully featured and supports a lot of different schemes for prioritizing your tasks. And you can go to TechNet and simply search for job scheduler on Windows HPC. So you would be able to utilize it any way you like. And there are a lot of documentation around that. So I will be here for the next 5 minutes, and if there are any questions, please raise them right now.
Wenming, are there any questions that you have frequently had brought up to you in the past?
Yes. So some of the questions may include how do you get the software? The HPC software is available on the downloads.microsoft.com, and you can get our trial beta, which is actually shown in this webcast. I've been using it myself, and it has been very stable and very pleasantly surprised myself that it simply works. I have not had any problems with it. Underneath the HPC clustering software, it's our Windows HPC Server R2 product, which is extremely stable and very usable from a workstation standpoint to a server standpoint, also as the main engine behind the HPC Server 2008 R2. So I think that concludes our webcast today. And I will wait for another minute for any questions. Christian, you may take over at any time.
Great. I'd like to remind everyone to take a moment to fill out the survey prior to exiting the session room. With that, I'd like to extend a special thanks to Wenming Yi for today's presentation. And thank you all for joining us. You may now disconnect from the audio portion of today's conference. However, if you have any last-minute questions, please submit them via the Q&A manager.
Oh, I see. There's another question in the queue that says how to diagnose node failures. You can use your diagnostic tools, and you know I usually like to see if the software fails, and I would certainly go over and look at the node itself, if it's a hardware failure or a software failure. Our tools would be able to tell you and pinpoint where the failure occurs by supplying you with a set of diagnostic tests. So I think that is all the questions.
All right. Thank you one more time. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.